We've told the children that Jesus came as light. We're going to just spend just a few minutes, not much time this morning, just a few minutes thinking about in what way is Jesus light? What is the darkness that he's come to set us free from? What is the darkness? What is the brokenness that he wants to mend? That's what we're going to look at this morning. And we're going to stick largely in this story of this lady. So this is where we are. Jesus Christ, how did he come? He came bringing light. Light into the darkness of, and I'm going to suggest to you there are at least three things here. I'm going to look at three of them. Light into the darkness of sin's guilt. This lady is, I think it would be fair to say, dragged before Jesus. Dumped in front of him as a tool, a weapon in the argument against Jesus. What's he going to say now? How's he going to sort this one out? This lady's guilty. And Moses, well, Moses was told that anybody guilty of adultery should be stoned. The act of stoning was a community act. Once it started, once the first stone was thrown, the person's fate was decided. The community then would have to join in. And in that sense, it was a community action, conviction and sentence. It was reserved for the most serious. And actually, at this time, it wasn't even allowed. The Jews weren't allowed to practice it at all because the Romans were in charge. And the Romans had to give authority for execution, which is why Jesus had to appear before Pilate for his execution. So there's all sorts of difficulties. There's no way that Jesus can say she deserves to be stoned and this crowd are going to stone her. That's not going to happen. They know they can't do it. But the issue isn't, will she get stoned? The issue is, what will Jesus say? This lady's guilty. Is he going to say the same thing as Moses? Is he going to be different? If he's different from Moses, we can ignore him for the rest of our lives, thankfully. They've come to test. We'll get to them in a second. But what about the lady? It is despicable that the man is not brought before Jesus as well. This is not justice. However, she is guilty. And she could say, well, what about the man? She could say, you can't stone me, it's against the law. She could say all those things, which are true. But she is guilty. She's been found in the act. What about guilt? That's an important question, isn't it? Because it's not just this lady set before Jesus who knows what guilt is it? You know what guilt is, don't you? Young people, you know what it's like to be told off rightly by your parents. Maybe you've had an argument with a brother or a sister. Maybe you've done something to your mum and dad. And you've been wrong. They've told you off. And you know you were in the wrong. That's guilt. That's guilt. And I suspect we would lose count if we started to add up the number of times we knew we were guilty. Wouldn't we? But the Bible talks about guilt, not just about how we are with one another. The Bible talks about guilt and how we are with God. This lady is guilty because of the action that she took with another man. She sinned against the community, which is why at one time they could have taken that action against her. But she's also sinned against God. And that is true of every action, every thought, every emotion that we do and feel guilty for. It is not just against people, it's also against God. It's God. Remember the four sticks on the orange? God is the king of the world. He rules. And when we hurt his creation, especially his people, we are breaking his law. We are, by definition, guilty. What do we do with that guilt? Maybe it's increasing age. But conscience, in hindsight, seems to heighten as you get older. Young people, that's yet to come to you, okay? But is that not true? We look back on actions and thoughts and words with increasing regret and guilt. What are we to do with it? How can it be resolved? Well, Jesus here is wonderful. The crowd are using this woman as a political or religious football. They want to score points against Jesus. But Jesus is not playing their game at all. They don't care for her. He does. And he raises this question. Okay. He who is without sin, cast the first stone. The first stone is the important action, remember. The first stone is the community saying, she's guilty, she deserves to die. But look at what happens. Verse 9. Then those who heard it, that's Jesus' command. If you're innocent, throw the first stone. Being convicted by their conscience, went out one by one. If they had stones in their hands, ready to stone her, which I suspect they didn't, you would hear them fall, thud, and then footsteps walking away. Probably in verbal silence. Not grumbling and mumbling in frustration that they couldn't do what they wanted to do. But Jesus has exposed them. They know they're guilty. And his question to the lady, when it's just him and her, where are those accusers of yours? Has no one condemned you? No one, Lord, she replies. This is the important bit. What will God do with your guilt? Neither do I condemn you. Jesus, the point is, was sinless. No fault, no blame, no guilt. He could have cast the first stone and condemned her to death. But there's not condemnation when we meet Jesus Christ with our guilt. There is forgiveness. What can you do with your guilt? Bring it to the forgiving Jesus Christ. That is your only option. If you want it resolved, if you want it dealt with, you can bury it if you want. Try and forget about it. Pretend it's not there. You can excuse yourself. You can compare yourself to others. You can do all those things. It won't make a blind bit of difference. The guilt is still there. Whether you feel it or not, you bring it to a forgiving Jesus Christ and ask him to deal with you as he did with this lady. Neither do I condemn you. That is priceless. You may be sitting here thinking, that's lovely, Stuart. Hurry up and get to the end. I don't really care. Can I plead with you? If ever guilt grabs your heart, whether it's tomorrow or in the years to come, if ever guilt grabs your heart, run to Jesus Christ. There is nobody else who will say those words with complete authority. Run to Jesus Christ. The light into the darkness of sin's guilt. Neither do I condemn you, said Jesus. Light into the darkness, secondly, of sin's grip. More briefly here. What does Jesus say next to the lady? You see what he says next? Go and sin no more. The Bible's picture for our life without Jesus Christ is that we are prisoners, captives, slaves even, to our own desires, sinful desires, and ultimately to the enemy of God. That's why the world's broken when we talk to the children. That's why the world's broken. There's an enemy of God, and people who live without God are actually following the enemy of God rather than God. We are captives, prisoners, slaves to sin. But when Jesus doesn't condemn her, forgives her, do you see what he does next? He sets her free. There's a swap in this little sentence. There's an indication of Jesus saying, you have a new master now. It's not you, it's not the enemy of God, it's me. It's me, I'm setting you free from sin. You are no longer under its controlling power. Now let me be clear, Christians, we will never ultimately be free of sin until the new creation, or heaven, whichever comes first. But we are freed from its power, its mastery over us, its authority. Light into the darkness of sin's grip. When God forgives, he comes in to cleanse the whole house. There's a wonderful picture in Scripture of us in our captivity being described as we are objects in the house of the enemy of God. We belong to the enemy of God, who is strong. And Jesus, you know what he does? He comes and he binds up the strong man. Binds him up. Makes him powerless. And then he plunders the house. He takes the things that once belonged to his enemy. He takes them and he makes them his. Do you see? When you become a Christian, the strong man, your one-time master, is bound up. And Jesus takes you from his house. And he brings you into his family. And he sets you free so you can live for him. There's light brought into sin's grip. No longer are we slaves of those things. Lastly, it's not just light into sin's grip, light into sin's guilt. It's also light into sin's blindness. And here I'm talking about the crowd. They arrived that day, gladly seeing this woman's sin. And the question in their mind was, how is Jesus going to deal with this one? What's he going to say? How's he going to get out of this? What's he going to do with this lady? But that is not the question they got home with. Jesus has confronted them, exposed them to their own sin. Okay, if you're sinless, throw the stone. And from the eldest to the youngest, one by one, they leave. One by one, they're realizing, actually, she is not the only sinner. I am too. And I suggest to you the question they go home with isn't, what's he going to do with her? But what am I going to do with my sin? What am I going to do? It's very easy. It's very easy to point the finger and to see the faults of others. Are you good at that? We're all good at that, aren't we? We might try a bucket load of self-control, put ourselves back, try and see the good in someone. But there are times the desire to see the worst in someone and hold on to it just bubbles up, doesn't it? And we are glad that we are not like so-and-so. And if we're in a conversation with someone with whom we agree, we'll easily point the finger. In other words, we're just like the crowd. We can be blind to the sin inside. And Jesus comes in, shines a light, and part of the experience of knowing Jesus and getting to know him better is that we see the filth inside of ourselves more clearly. Just like this crowd walking away, they knew she was guilty. They now know they're guilty too. Now that is painful, that is uncomfortable, but it is good. Do you know why it's good? Because blindness is bad. And if we are guilty but we don't see it, if we are enemies of God and held in the house of the enemy of God under his blood, and we don't see it, that is bad. But when the light of Jesus Christ shines and we see what is good and we see that we are not good, that's the start of Jesus calling us to himself. So light shines into the darkness of sin's blindness. You and I probably think more highly of ourselves. We probably think we're better than we are. The only antidote for that is to look at Jesus Christ. And as we see our guilt, our filth, we do what this lady did. Look to Jesus for the only resolution. Two lessons, if I may. The first one is this. Do you see how different Jesus is? Firstly from yourself. Would you have said that line to the crowd? He who is without sin, cast the first stone. That's a wonderful response, isn't it? There is wisdom that runs through every atom of the body of Jesus Christ. Complete wisdom. But it's not just wisdom, is it? It's wisdom in forgiving grace. He cares about this lady. He's the only one in the whole scenario who does. He cares for this lady. It is possible that you can think that Jesus Christ doesn't care for you, or that somehow God doesn't care for you. It's possible that in your life, sad things have happened. And you've decided it's far easier to say, well, God couldn't care, otherwise these things wouldn't happen. I want to urge you, look at Jesus Christ here. He cares. You can't do it any other way. He cares for this lady. He's the only one who does. Jesus Christ is different from everybody else. And if you're staying away from him because you think he doesn't care, or he's not good, or he's not wise, oh, come on. He is good. He is wise. He does and will forgive. Presents himself in this story as a God to be trusted. So Jesus Christ is different. Lastly, do you see how different he makes us? The crowd went from being those who felt free to condemn to being convicted. They're made different this day. And this woman goes from being guilty to being forgiven, cleansed and set free. Do you see how different she is? There's a lovely little, bear with me on this one, there's a lovely little children's story about a village of wooden characters, hand-carved wooden characters who are alive. It's a children's story. One character we're introduced to is called Punchinello. And the system is that even though they've been created by Eli the woodcarver, who lives high up on the hill, down in the valley, the wooden people have a system of approval or condemnation. If they like you, you get a star sticker stuck on you. If they don't like you, you get a dot sticker stuck on you. So if you can't do something, you get a dot sticker. If you can do something, you get a star sticker. And if you have one star sticker, well, you must be good, so you get a second one. And these wooden characters walk around the village with a box full of stickers, just to hand out as they see fit. And these wooden characters walk around with stickers all over them. Some mainly stars, some mainly dots. Punchinello, he's got dots left, right and centre. And then one day he meets a little lady, Lucia. She's not got any stickers on her at all. How do you do that? He asks. Oh, it's really easy, she said. Every day I go up and see Eli, the woodcarver, and he just tells me what he thinks of me. And I just find That's the best way. And when I receive His love, the stickers don't stick. Punchinello thinks to himself, this is too good to be true. So the next day he ventures up the hill and he tentatively walks into the woodcarver's carpentry area. Forgotten the word, sorry. And Eli knows him by name and starts to speak to him. I've missed you, says Eli. How have you been? How are you? Punchinello, I want you to know that I love you. And Punchinello has this conversation. He's scared and then he becomes increasingly comfortable as the conversation goes. He realizes this, Eli's the real deal. He does love. He does care. And as he leaves, Eli says to Punchinello, make sure you come back and see me tomorrow. It's been lovely to see you. And Punchinello walks out the door, and as he does, he thinks to himself, I think he means it. I think he loves me. And as he walks and thinks that, one of the dots just falls off. He's starting to realize. It doesn't matter what people think. What matters is what God thinks. Now, it's a child's story, but it's God's story. Eli's a picture of God, and we're a picture of the wood characters who live by what people think of us. But there is a loving God, gracious, forgiving, ready to give. And when we live by the beat of His drum, more accurately the beat of His heart, when we receive from Him the love that He has for us, that makes us different. And that's the call of Jesus Christ. Let me make a difference in your life. Let my light shine in you. Let me forgive you. Let me set you free. Jesus shines because this world is not just big and beautiful, it is broken. And He's come to mend it. He's come to heal you. Forgive your sin, set you free, and love you. Now that's light worth living in, isn't it? So Jesus says, he who follows me shall not walk in darkness, but have the light of life. Do you want to know Jesus Christ? Talk to the person you've come with today. Talk to myself after the service during the week. You don't need to talk to anybody except God. We might be able to help. But bring yourself to Jesus Christ. Let Him love you, forgive you, and heal you. Let His light shine in your darkness.